Hey everyone, welcome to That Triathlon Life podcast. I'm Eric Lagerstrom.
I'm Paula Finley.
I'm Nick Goldston.
And this is our podcast about triathlon, where we talk about what's going on in triathlon, our journey in triathlon, and the bulk of the show is us taking some questions from you, the people who listen to this.
And generally, we also do recaps of winning races every week.
And we only win here. If we race, we win.
If we race, we win. That is the rule.
If we don't win, we don't talk about it. Just cry on the couch by ourselves.
And that is a little precursor to the announcement that Nick came in first place at the Malibu Triathlon Celebrity Division, and he also won his age group.
Yeah.
Nick, can you put a round of applause sound effect in there?
Of course.
Or just make yourself a theme song for Celebrity Division. Wait to hear it.
It was a little funny that I was in the celebrity division, but I think there every once in a while there's some like actual big celebrities that come in. But I will say I did rack my bike next to Toby Flenderson from The Office. I don't know his real name, but I know his name on The Office, and it's Toby. He's I don't know if you remember, he's the one that Michael hates. He works in like HR and he's always very low mood. Yeah. He's very similar to that in person. I talked to him for a second.
Really?
Yeah, very similar. I'm like, oh, you are Toby.
So did he just slide into that role perfectly, or did like the role take over who he is?
Oh no, that's a good question. Did it incept him and now he is that person? He used to be a jolly Holly guy.
Did you try to talk to him, Nick?
I talked to him for a second because I thought he dropped something, but it wasn't his. But he was like, oh no, it's not mine, no. I'm like, oh boy, dude. You're about to race a tri. You got to get into gear. But he had a nice Pinarello bike and he had like nice gear. He clearly actually like swims, bikes, and runs to some degree.
Oh, wow. But you beat him.
I did beat him.
Nick, but what Eric and I were talking about is, maybe you're not like a Hollywood celebrity, but in terms of the triathlon world, you probably got the most requests for like pictures with you.
I think when people do recognize me, they're like, oh, it's Nick from TTL Podcast. It's not like there's this guy, I think his name was Chase Crawford. He was on Gossip Girl. He raced in the celebrity division. The guy who got third place was like a TikTok celebrity. I think people feel a little intimidated to go up to those people, but I don't think people feel intimidated to go up to me, which is great.
You're highly approachable.
There was a lot of TTL representation at this race, a lot of TTL hats. And it was fun to see that and talk to all those folks.
And every time I see a comment on Nick's posts that are like, oh, Nick should have a TTL race kit, makes my blood boil. It makes my blood boil.
We tried.
FedEx lost the package. It is in heaven.
It's in FedEx heaven. That's exactly what the rep told me.
FedEx purgatory.
Next year, we'll get him another kit, but we are deeply saddened.
Yeah.
Yes.
By the loss of this kit. Yes. So it's fine though.
Yeah. There is a non-zero chance that we will get it. We just found out that the FedEx Heaven, for a fee, they can retrieve certain packages. So we are looking into it for maybe one more race this year.
Can they retrieve my childhood pet turtle?
Yes, it's also there living out its best life. And all your dogs from childhood are there as well.
Terrible, terrible.
Yeah. But yes, it was funny. And just so it's clear, you do not elect to be put into the celebrity division. They put you into it. Okay. I didn't check a box that said I'm a celebrity. It dawned on me yesterday that people might think that.
Well, you're definitely a triathlete / celebrity and not the other way around.
Yes. I'm triathlete first.
Overqualified.
We should probably back that up and say that Paula and I are both professional triathletes. Nick is not a professional triathlete. He's an amateur triathlete, professional musician. But you just knew somebody at this race who was organizing the celebrity field, right?
Yes. Well, first of all, let me also just say that someone messaged, I think Paula, or wrote in and said, like, wait, now that Nick won this race, can he get his pro card?
Not that type of race.
Which is great. It wasn't a pro race. Also, I am nowhere near being able to get my pro card. And on top of all that, I very valiantly said on this podcast that even if I ever qualified for it, I would never accept it. Which is very easy for me to say because I will never even have the chance to deny it. But, I look very noble by saying that.
I think we should get a little bit of a recap from you. Just about the whole Malibu Triathlon experience. This is kind of a neat race.
The reason I'm racing the celebrity division in the first place is because the person who was doing the celebrity division last year was a girl named Kelsey, who we all know, who now lives in Bend. She was a big fan of the podcast. And then so she reached out. Last year, I had DNF'd Ironman Wisconsin the weekend before Malibu Triathlon. And I was very bummed, and everyone knew. And she offered for me to race Malibu Tri last minute in the celebrity division. Or I think last year I was like VIP, which is not quite the celebrity division. And then this year, I was supposed to do it again. And I had convinced Trixie to do the run relay portion of the race. And she was going to do it with Henry Schumann and someone else. But the night before the race, I was at a bonfire and I got a call from her saying that she stubbed her toe pretty badly and couldn't really run. So Trixie did not end up doing the race, which is a bummer because it was on like, I think it was on like local news and stuff that Trixie was going to do it. And that Diplo also did the race. I'm trying to think of who else. I forget. I don't know celebrities very well at all. But so I ended up just being me this
That's
year.
That's what happens when you are one.
you're too close to it.
Yeah, right. Of course. That's what it is. Anyway, so I lined up. The only bummer about this whole thing is that I had to I lined up and started with the celebrity division, which means I didn't go off with the 30 to 34 males who were my real competition, right? I had a pretty good feeling, no offense to the other celebrities, I had a pretty good feeling that I was going to win the celebrity division, but I was interested in winning my age group. I'm sorry, Toby from The Office. This is an HR violation.
Toby, you've been sized up.
Yeah. Sorry. So I didn't really know. And every year I've done this race, I've gotten second in my age group. So I was hoping to win this one. What didn't help my chances is that the bike was cut in half. And my strength is the bike. So I thought, oh, this is probably not my year. But anyway, went off, swam, okay, biked. My power was not good. I'm now remembering I didn't calibrate my power meter, but I do think it read pretty accurately. And power was not good, but my speed was the best ever I've had in a race. If I just take if I take out like the getting out of transition and getting back into transition, I was about 25 miles an hour average on a very flat course, but it did have like 6 U-turns in 24 minutes. So there was a lot of slowing down there. So it was my best ever speed on a bike.
You think you're like more aero? Like what's different of you?
I think I am. I think I was riding alongside you once, Eric, and I was like asking you about different head positions and you gave me a very clear like, oh no, that there. And so ever since then, I've tried to focus on that. It's just hard because when I'm in that position, I really cannot see very far up the road at all.
That's how you know you're going fast.
Yeah. but I was able to kind of just like look up every once in a while. The course was very congested, but honestly, I don't think it affected my race at all. I'm pretty comfortable in aero, like maneuvering. So it was good to look down and constantly see like 25, 26, 27 miles an hour when I was moving. Mm-hmm. The race attracts a lot of first timers, I think. So it's an extra ego boost when someone's going like 16 miles an hour and I'm going almost 10 miles an hour faster than them. I'm like, oh, I'm really moving fast. And that, of course, just like feeds the cycle of going faster. And so that was good. And then on the run, both on the bike and on the run, I had this feeling that my muscles were kind of like lactic a little bit. At the beginning part of it. And then as the sport went on, I kind of settled into it and was able to hold higher power at the same perceived exertion. And we talked about this a little bit after the race too. And I think my lesson from this race, if I could learn something, is I probably do need to do like a proper warm-up, which I probably is so obvious to everyone else, but I've never really found that much of a benefit in it, but today I think I really noticed it, especially on the run. So when I set out on the run, my goal was to hold like 20-minute 5K pace. That was like my top goal, even though it was a 4-mile run, a little longer than 5K. And I started trying to do that, and I noticed right away that I couldn't. I was just like very, very difficult. So I slowed it down about 20 seconds per mile, and then I kept that same level of intensity in my mind, but my pace just kept getting faster and faster and faster. It didn't feel like that jelly legs, like brick run feeling. It just felt too difficult for me in a way that I guess I can't remember feeling before. So eventually the pace came up to a point where I was running almost like 6 10-minute miles by the end, and my average pace by the end was 6:22 per mile, which is a good chunk faster than any other run split I have done in any triathlon.
Nice.
Maybe that pacing strategy just works for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I did at Morro Bay too. But that was, I started slow in that one because I thought no way I could hold the pace faster than this. So I'm going to chill. And it felt very easy. This did not feel as easy, but all my good races have been negative splits. And I, you know, you hear about this a lot, like negative splitting is the way to go. But it certainly seems that physiologically my body is trying to do that as well, not just my mind.
Yeah. I think that in a short race like this, warming up becomes more important. I often feel in a 70.3 like warming up is not totally necessary. I'll jog around, especially if it's cold. But in a race that's so short, like the one you did, yeah, maybe it is important to put more emphasis on the warm up and just feel good right off the bat, because there's really no time to warm up.
Yeah.
The race is over before you feel good, really. So I don't know. That's a good lesson, though.
I'm going to try it. At least do a little run warm up. Before even like a sprint or an Olympic next time. Yeah. I don't know. 70.3, we don't have that much of an opportunity to, because there's so much.
Really hard with the overnight bike check-in and like everything's super controlled and
shut
down. But
then in those races, you have more time to build into it. So less critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so then the funny part is that when they were doing awards, I didn't know if they were going to have a celebrity division like podium. I was expecting just to be on the male 30 to 34 podium, and they announced a couple of the relay groups, and then we were the first awards. I was the first awards, and so everyone is still there. There's a ton of cameras around, and they accidentally, instead of saying here are your top three individual male celebrity, they say top three males, here they come. And they put me at number one. I'm like, this is so awkward. A, I'm not even a celebrity. B, I did not win the overall race. And I'm just walking up on stage, just like 15 photographers all there, all snapping pictures. I walk off stage, there's like a camera in my face. I want to be like, I didn't actually win the overall race, but thank you for all the attention. I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, so it was very fun to be there and to feel a lot of the energy. There was a lot of TTL people that stuck around and came up.
And you watched... You watched the Super League the day before, right?
I watched the Super League the day before, which was insane how fast. Yeah. I mean, someone like Ben Canute, he raced. And someone like, you know, in any 70.3 or even a full distance, he's a serious contender for podium or the win. And he was able to swim with them the first round. And then right away on the bike, it just, those people are so specialized in that. That he couldn't really, by the end of the bike and the run, and it's a very short little thing, he was out the back. And I thought, damn, even Ben can't keep up with.
And he used to be really, really good at that. That was like his bread and butter. But it just kind of goes to show that if you hone your body for an Ironman, that's completely different than a 17-minute race.
It was also crazy to see Christian Blumenfeld, who was there. He was kind of struggling with the in and out of the water, but he was catching up on the bike and the run every time. The pain face he makes he buries himself so deep, but he was catching them every time. I don't understand what that man is made of.
Trying the hardest.
But it was very fun. The whole weekend was really fun.
That's awesome. It's a cool event.
It was fun. Thank you everyone who was there, who said hi. Also, there was a couple of people who came up to me and said that they were a big fan of the TTL coffee subscription. Which I thought was great. I'm like, wow, I haven't heard about the coffee subscription in a while.
Yeah, we don't promote it that much, but it's still a thing. It's cooking along, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, basically the premise of it is that we ship out a fresh bag of TTL beans that is roasted by one of our good friends in Seattle who roasts beans and makes coffee and has his own coffee shop, and a different blend every month. So that's the idea of it. And
really good.
You want to sign up? Treat it's on our palette. Website. Yeah.
There was a lot of people with TTL hats too and TTL shirts.
We got more of that coming too. Working on a very cool re-release collection.
Yeah, we did a different kind of logo this time. It's kind of out there, but we'll see. It's not the typical circle.
That's the winter collection. I really like it.
Yeah, I like it too. It's different. And I think like if you already own stuff that has the circle and the classic logo, it's cool to have something that's so different. So
slight remix.
Yeah, it's a little remix of it. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Well, if you don't mind, I have a special segment that we have not really done in a while here.
It's a spelling bee, right?
It's a spelling bee.
TTL spelling bee. Wow.
Oh no.
Yeah. Oh no. Because Eric is always the subject of the spelling bee here.
I haven't been practicing. As long as it's not last names of hockey players, I'm
yeah,
good.
That's what that was not a good one.
That was not fair. That was a tough one.
okay, here's the first one. I'm really old school, so I still use cantilever brakes.
Dantilever.
Correct. That's correct. Very good, Eric. Your savant spelling has stood the test here so far. Okay, next one here. We only have three. Before her race last week, Paula had intercostal pain.
Intercostal.
That is also correct. Very good. And the final one here, I would bet that this one will get you.
All right.
Yeah, I think this one will get you.
It's good to show your human side and fail occasionally.
You like pretend to fail. Okay, Paula, if he doesn't get this, I want you to try it, okay?
Okay.
Traveling with triathletes is a nightmare. Them with all their paraphernalia.
E-A-R-A-P-H-P. Yeah, I already got to P-H. E-N-A-L-I-A.
Very close, but not correct.
Eh.
So there's this very sneaky letter in there that is not pronounced when you say it. You were missing one letter, Eric. Paula, you want to give it a shot? Paula, don't look it up. I see you getting to your phone.
I'm not looking it up.
Okay, yeah, you're just scrolling Instagram.
Okay, let me give it a shot.
Okay.
P-A-R-A-P-H.
Yeah, so far.
E-R-N-A-L-I-A.
Wow, Paula! Did you cheat?
Okay, I looked it up. Okay, fine, I looked it up. Well, Eric nice. Made me a drink tonight and then served me wine.
You asked for wine.
So I am a little bit...
On the tipsy turvy
side. On the tipsy side. So of course I can't spell paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia. Paraphernalier.
Wow. So okay,
that was Conor Perfinarin earlier.
So that was our little segment. We try to do one every week. Usually if we do a race recap, we don't do a segment, but I felt like this was worth it. One more thing before we get to questions. Every week when we can, we try to pick a winner from our podcast supporters. Podcast supporters, it's a $5 a month or $10 a month, whatever you want. To help the podcast keep going. As you noticed, we have never done an ad read on this podcast. We're maybe inching towards a day where I don't think we'll ever do ad reads, but we may have podcast sponsors. But for now, we do not. So the only thing that keeps the podcast going is our podcast supporters. And also, if you buy a t-shirt or the coffee subscription, all that stuff is great. So this week, we scanned the system here, the library of podcast supporters, and we used our trusty Google random number generator, and we got one of our favorite ever last names that we've gotten as a podcast supporter winner. Congratulations to Alex Stepflug. Stepflug sounds like it sounds like a genre of music or something. It's like, what do you listen to? You listen to like rap or rock? No. I only go to deep house Stepflug concerts.
I'm only laughing because of the expression that you made said it.
It's all good. We love
it. You're thinking Steppenwolf.
I'm thinking of like dubstep.
Mm.
I feel like Stepflug is like a cool version of Stepflug. Anyway, Alex, Alex in Long Beach, please reach out to one of us. I would say me, since I'm sending them to you. I did find one more pair of socks. You'll be getting
last
a pair of socks.
Last pair of TTL socks in existence.
That's right. So you can message me with your address and we'll send you those socks. You can become a podcast supporter as well. And potentially, I think we're going to be moving on to bottles going forward. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a lot of bottles.
We can do bottles. Paula and I each have signature edition bottles that the only way one could ever get these is if we give them away on the podcast.
Right.
And we also have some new coffee mugs coming. So we'll have to decide what direction we're going to go.
You can become a podcast supporter as well and submit your questions to the podcast at thattriathlonlife.com/podcast. And we're running a little lean on questions. If you wanted to send in yours, I think there's a good chance we'll read it next week on the pod.
I mean, you guys know the questions that we always answer on here, but if it's like asking for something that might be more appropriate for a coach, we likely will not get to it. And there was probably like five of those this week. So anyway.
There's a good chance. And this week we're going to do fewer questions, but we're going to end on something that is kind of like a bit of a deep dive that Eric brought to my attention a couple weeks ago that he said that it would be a fun to kind of do a whole podcast about.
Well, I think we should do a teaser for that because I think it is a pretty interesting topic. I get an email probably once every couple of weeks, once a month from somebody asking just for like, I think I'm going to try to turn pro. Do you have any advice? Like full stop, you know, just like, I don't know anything at all. It seems like this crazy ocean to dive into. What can you like, where do I even, what are the questions I even need to ask? So I think we're going to try to get a little bit more into that. And I think we could do an entire podcast just on that, but we'll get into it and start at least this week.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, so the first question here is from Paula, not our Paula, a different Paula. Hello, mom and dads. It's a very modern family here. Hope everything is going great and beautifully in your lives. I have an alcohol-related question. How appropriate. I love wine more than one cup, with the J's. I love the with the J's. But I really feel kind of hungover the next day, and I feel like training suffers a bit. I'm age group and really focus on performance. How do you incorporate it into your day-to-day? Thank you so much, Paula. Okay, so that's, I think generally speaking, do you guys have a kind of a rule with alcohol, or do you let yourself kind of feel it out each time?
I think I drink a little bit more than Paula, and I don't really have any rules with it, but typically if we have a hard workout the next day, I will try to avoid the temptation to have a whiskey before bed. That's about the only thought that goes through my mind with it. And neither of us, when we say we drink, like we'll have a glass of wine or one mixed drink, we very rarely are like two or three. And when at least... Yeah, I can say that when we have two plus, that we definitely feel it the next day, and that's a performance detriment, and that's something that definitely take into consideration the timing of if we do.
Yeah, I don't feel like I have a hangover the next day, maybe because I just don't drink enough, but I think a good tip that I try to remember is just to drink enough water along with the wine, because a lot of the times my negative feelings after I drink is like a raging headache before I go to bed. So that can be counterbalanced a little bit by just drinking water alongside the wine, because wine is not quenching your thirst or rehydrating you from the training in that day. So yeah, just make sure you got water with your wine.
I think it's also easy to drink, especially white wine, a little quicker if you are actually thirsty.
Yeah, because it tastes good and it's cold.
Right.
Yeah. So just don't drink your wine as your post-race rehydration or your post-workout rehydration.
Just got to go in the correct order. Protein shake, give it a minute, then get to the wine.
But we actually just drove through Napa Valley on our way back home from, I flew back from Augusta. And then that night I booked a flight for Sacramento because Eric was kind of in that area. And then we basically drove up all along the California coast and Oregon coast back to Bend. And went through Napa Valley. We're not big wine connoisseurs or anything, but we do enjoy it. So it was kind of fun to go to a few tastings where we could taste back to back different kinds of wine and different blends and all of this, and kind of like really tell the difference in the flavors. And I can see why people go down the rabbit hole and become really, really passionate about wine. It's like coffee. You can become such a big fan of the whole thing.
Different tastes. And you know, how did we arrive at these different tastes with the harvest date versus the row, you know, and like
really knowledgeable winemakers that are doing the tasting, so they can kind of help you and explain and talk you through it. So I don't think wine is just a means to get a little tipsy. It's like an art.
Do you think it's a coincidence that something like coffee and wine, it's an acquired taste? Right, it's not something like chocolate or like Coca-Cola that the very first time you have it, you're like, whoa, I love this right away. Do you think it's a coincidence that both of those things have this crazy deep culture and variety and flavors and different tiers of it and so much put into it? I feel like there's something about that that must be connected.
That's really interesting, man. I don't know. That's a really good question, because you're totally right. I can't really think of a third thing to put into that category, which might just be my lack of education, but those two things have so much in common, and that is one of them. The first time I tried wine, spat it out. First time I tried coffee, spat it out.
Yeah.
And now they are so interesting. And maybe that also has to do with the time in your life when you try wine or coffee at first and how developed your palate is. I don't know. Maybe we should call Dusty.
I don't like any alcohol. I don't really drink alcohol, and that's a big part of the reason. I don't like the way it tastes. And I feel like you're all just lying to each other and telling each other that you like the way it tastes. That's how it feels to me.
You clearly still have your 12-year-old palate.
I have the 12-year-old a lot of things. My brain is still like 12 years old.
Nick, I think if you went to some wine tastings in whatever, even Italy, especially Italy maybe, you would learn to like it. Because they give you like one sip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's barely enough. You're not drinking it because it tastes like Coke.
I think I'm at a point now with it that I feel like I've been given a gift, that I don't really like alcohol and I don't feel any kind of pull towards it. And I'm just going to try to ride that out forever because I don't need the social lubricant. I don't want to say I don't need it. I love socializing in my fully sober state. And I don't feel like I'm missing anything. I don't feel a lack of confidence when talking to new people. So it doesn't give me that. And then everything else seems like it's kind of enjoyable, but you're kind of tangoing with a lot of negatives as well. Mm. And I already have a problem with eating probably too much sugar. So I don't need to add another vice into the mix there.
I think the other thing that's similar between coffee and wine is like the act of doing it is pretty enjoyable.
Yeah.
Oh, like going to a wine bar or going to a coffee shop, nice, or having a friend over and, you know, doing fika social, or having a glass of wine. It's the social aspect of it is like inseparable to the feelings.
And both of them have entire ecosystems built around them.
Mm-hmm.
Like coffee around the experience. Shops. There is a coffee aesthetic. There is an outfit that is a coffee outfit that you go to, like a hipster with a scarf and a beanie, right? And wine bars and alcohol in general also have an entire culture. I mean, nightlife is mainly built around alcohol. It's really interesting how much both of these things are not inherently enjoyable, but then become intertwined and almost like a part of people's identity. You know, it's like, have you ever seen those like live, laugh, love style signs? It's like, if I'm not drinking coffee, then I'm drinking wine. It's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wine, that's the first us, coffee. Nick.
Just kidding.
But the really interesting thing here is I looked into this a little bit, and I think anecdotally we can all feel that alcohol is probably counterproductive to training, at least in large amounts, right? That becomes obvious when you're hungover and you're like, I can't imagine going on for a run right now. But here's what I found, and I'm just going to read this straight from their website here. This is a conclusion from a study. Actually, I was looking at a bunch of studies. Both the effects of alcohol on human physiology and the parameters that determine athletic performance are multifactorial and extremely complicated. A significant body of literature has established an array of adverse symptoms caused by acute alcohol ingestion. However, the notion that alcohol consumption affects performance has not yet received enough consistent validation to advance beyond being anecdotal. Nevertheless, just because alcohol is not yet comprehensively shown to have a negative influence on performance does not imply this review advocates its use prior to or following competition. Indeed, the data demonstrates a severe lack of analysis on the possible detrimental action of alcohol in the recovering athlete. However, based on the available experimental evidence in cellular and rodent models, athletes should remain wary of ingesting alcohol following intense exercise, focusing instead on effective dietary strategies proven to enhance recovery.
I thought that was all interesting.
I just thought that was interesting. I thought it would be like unanimously like, do not, if you're an athlete, do not ever consume alcohol. But it seems like that may be the case, but not to the degree that that I assumed, at least.
Yeah. I think like the logic so far has basically been like, well, alcohol makes you feel shitty. Is shitty feeling shitty part of recovering well from training?
No.
So yeah, ideally you'd want to not feel shitty while you're trying to recover. But yeah, it sounds just, I mean, from that article, it just sounds like no one has done a study yet on this to have somebody do a 5-minute maximal test one day and then drink a bunch of wine and then the next morning do another one. Nobody's interested in running that study.
Maybe we'll do that study along with Sleep Week.
Study of three.
The Sleep Week,
we're doing drink and train week. This is shaping up to be an awesome off season.
That's right. What'd you do? Well, I slept like 10 hours a day and got freaking smoked
Did
every night.
Science on myself all winter.
By the way, I had a few people message me saying that if we do Sleep Week to do the Aura Ring circles, have you seen those where you can get a bunch of people in on it and then everyone can see your... the three Aura scores, which are readiness, sleep, and activity score. So okay, I think sweet. That could be kind of cool if we see any like trends, you know, if like maybe a 50 or 100 people join that circle. I think that could be
fun.
Yeah,
if so, we could make that like a link that people could get to easily, that'd be sweet.
Oh, yeah.
You have to have an Aura ring to participate in that?
I think we've got at least, there's probably at least 20 people that listen to this that have an Aura ring who would get in on our science.
20 people.
I'm just saying at least, you know?
I would say probably 2,000.
With an Aura ring
yeah.
that listen to this podcast.
It's yes. definitely closer to 1,000 than it is to 20. I mean,
yeah.
Or it's not well, I just didn't want to be presumptuous
what
about
do you think
the
is
number
pro-tri-news?
Of Aura rings yeah. that are out there.
Wow, the pro-tri news call out. No, I'm sure. Just it's a triathletes are obsessed with their gear. And you make it sound like we have 100 people listening to this podcast, Eric.
Well, I'm just, there, I mean, going from like, you listen to the podcast, you have an Aura ring, you're willing to find and click on the link from this thing and follow
okay,
it.
Okay,
like,
that's true. There's many layers saying, of filtering. You're right. Next question is from Juju. Hi, TTL gang. I'm doing 70.3 Memphis next week and water temperature could be all over the place. My question is swim skin versus wetsuit if the water is right on the edge of being wetsuit legal. Is the wetsuit advantage still big over a swim skin? Thanks for all the content you create. Cheers, Juju.
Yes, this is a very, very quick, easy answer. Always faster, significantly faster. Not even a question. If it's legal, you wear a wetsuit.
Yeah.
It's the opposite, right? Like the swim skin is not crazy faster than no swim skin if you have a suit that doesn't have pockets or anything like that.
Which no one does.
The difference between nothing and swim skin is smaller than the difference between swim skin and wetsuit.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. For sure. And have you guys ever swam a race where it was right on the line? And of course, all the pros are still using a wetsuit. But did you notice like, ooh, I'm a little uncomfortably hot and it's affecting my swim?
That yeah. is what I was going to add at the end of this.
But ooh. The wetsuit cutoff for age group is higher than the wetsuit yeah. cutoff for us. More. So if it's wetsuit legal for us, it's pretty cold. So I've personally never overheated.
But that would be my main concern if I was in the age group field. They're like the last degree at which you can wear a wetsuit and hasn't been made wetsuit illegal yet, I would massively, massively overheat in my wetsuit prior to getting onto the bike, you know, and heaven forbid, like the bike be at hot conditions as well.
Yeah, it kind of depends what the ambient temperature is. If you're racing in Mexico, it's going to be really hot when you get on the bike versus... Even Augusta was a little bit on the edge, at least for the pros, but the air was cold enough that the wetsuit would be no problem. So yeah. just kind of read the situation, know your body, but buoyancy-wise and pure speed-wise, X versus Y, it's going to be faster to use a wetsuit.
Totally.
Would you guys use a sleeveless wetsuit Eric, would you use a sleeveless wetsuit in that?
That actually could be a nice compromise, but personally, I have not really liked the fit of sleeveless wetsuits. I actually feel like there's more material kind of in the shoulders because they've got some seams and I don't know.
Yeah,
I just don't like the feeling
one,
of like the, I don't know. I feel like a really high-end sleeved wetsuit feels nicer than they don't really make really high-end sleeveless wetsuits
right.
for the most part. But yeah, that's an interesting middle ground possibly to like mitigate some of the overheating. If you had access to all of these things, you know, 20 minutes before you jump in the water.
Yeah, it's the hot water that I would be with. I wonder if you actually overheat in it.
I would, for sure. I mean, when we do heat protocol, what we'll do is actually sit in the hot tub. And like the hot tub time that you do is like a little bit less than the sauna time because your body absolutely cannot cool itself down while you're in water. Your sweat is completely useless. And like we've seen a couple of unfortunate deaths in open water swimming due to this overheating in warmer tropical races. So when I do a hot water swim like Cabo, it almost gets me the most kind of panicky or my body shuts down the quickest because it knows there's no, like my cooling systems are doing nothing right now.
I even when I swim, like in my pool here, we have a fitness pool and the splash pool. And the splash pool still has lanes and you still can do your whatever swim. Actually, I swam in there with Gustav and Christian when they came because that's all the room we had. It's like waist deep and it's quite a bit warmer. And I, in that one in the summer, between reps, have to stand up to cool off because I'm getting too hot in the water. And a place like Cabo, it's real hot.
Yeah. You just have to slow down.
Yeah. So,
anyway, that's the one caveat to when you might want to not go the wetsuit route when it's on the line, is if you have overheating issues.
Would you tell Juju to potentially try to swim in the river the day before or a couple days before and test it out?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea.
And maybe final thing for that, what kind of effort should she do to not screw up her race, but also get a good data point for if she should use a wetsuit or not?
Definitely do at least, you know, like a couple of 40-second efforts, I would say, to kind of get your heart rate up and get you breathing harder after you've warmed up.
Okay. Next and last question here, and this is our little deep dive.
Just because of the way that you're going to read this question, this is actually based off of an email that I got last. I get emails asking about this fairly regularly. I actually did a little bit of a talk for some USAT juniors once on this concept. So that's where this email is coming from.
Okay, got it. So it's from Maria. Dear Eric, I hope this email finds you well. I'm sorry that you had to miss out on Xterra World Championships because of your injury. By the way, let's do a little update on that. Eric, you are feeling a little bit better, right? Almost all the way.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I've kind of gotten past any pain and I just have a little bit of tightness in my knee. So we did a run today with our friend Nate, who was actually the guy who put the stitches in my leg, and I felt pretty good.
That's great.
No issues.
My name is Maria, and I was wanting to say hello at Xterra Germany, but never caught you there. I grew up in that area, and the OC challenge is the only reason I got into triathlon and started racing in the elite category. I'm reaching out to ask for some guidance and mentorship for basically everything. I have been following you and Paula's vlog and journey for a while, and I love how you approach things and the community you have built. My journey started with my mountain bike XCO and mountain bike marathon racing, and I later added cross triathlon as well as gravel racing. With the help of a cycling scholarship, I'm currently studying in the US, but I'm trying to focus more on sport and start my pro career. Do you have any general advice for me? What races to focus on, how to approach possible sponsors, etc.? Your opinion on trying to succeed in different disciplines. I would be very grateful for any advice. Thank you for your help. Best regards, Maria. So first of all, what's XCO and what's mountain bike marathon racing?
So XCO is the shorter stuff. That's like an hour and a half. And then marathon is more like 4 hour in length, mountain bike racing. UCI, these are both under the UCI banner.
Let's start by saying that you guys are able to make a full living off of triathlon, which is not common for the vast majority of people who have their pro card.
Right. I would say the fact that we are making a living at it, we've been doing it for 10 years or so, we own a house, like that puts us at a very small percentage.
And would you say that the way that you're able to make a living from it, is it unique to the pro field, or do you think you've done a good job at it, but it's not, you don't have any one specific scenario that is an outlier?
I would say that what we've done with regards to video was a bit pioneering, but now it is not unusual in the pro field. And that's really just to say that video was a new sort of platform alongside photo or like written word with blogs and stuff. And we kind of capitalized on that early. And now, like all new media, you're kind of just expected to take it on as, you know, an entrepreneur, basically athlete.
Right. Okay. So let's start by saying, what do you think that Maria should be focusing on, at least right now? And then maybe give her also like a 5 and 10 year kind of down the line, like, and you know, once you get to this point, you're going to start looking at whatever, talking to sponsors or getting a video person or whatever it is.
Yeah. I would say that first and foremost, the thing that you can't forget is that the actual craft itself of being the athlete has got to come first. Like for me, when I went from being completely unknown to a little bit known was at Escape from Alcatraz. And that was sort of due to me doing some video sort of thing. So there was a little bit of something that people could go look at once I had won the race, but it still took me winning the race in a sprint finish against Andy Potts to kind of like set all the kindling on fire. And then people were able to go and like, who is this Eric? And I had some pictures on Instagram. I had like written some blogs and I had done a couple videos. So there was something for people to go grab onto after that big result. So don't forget.
But the big result is what kicked it off.
It was still the catalyst. Yeah.
The way that you were living and training back then and still now, but was super intense. Like your whole life revolved around it. You were living with the triathlon squad and mm-hmm. That's undeniably the most important part is training hard enough and serious enough and smart enough to have, it doesn't necessarily have to be a breakthrough like you had in Alcatraz, but to make your results good enough for people to notice. And it's not having the best photos and having the best video on the internet.
Right. Yeah. I had actually before that, the thing that actually got me allowed into the race was that I'd won 3 Continental Cups in a row. So things were going great, but still just like it hadn't really caught on yet until having that big moment. But that being said, what I was doing and what I would recommend people do is that alongside of that, realize that people latch on to stories. And if you think back to like great movies that you've watched, like Hoosiers and, you know, just like any sports movie, you fall in love with this team as they're going through the process of becoming the champion. So if you can identify early on, like what are some things about me and my journey that are a little bit unique, and I'm going to try to bring those to the forefront, but just more importantly, like telling your story as you're working on this thing that you care a lot about and are working towards, that's super relatable. And people want to follow that and see how the story ends.
This reminds me of basically the TTL YouTube channel leading up to when Paula won Daytona.
Exactly. Same concept. It's not like that was planned. You know, we were trying really hard and it's just like all the things came together at the right time. And it was, people were on board. They knew what she'd been doing and what she'd been going through. And so it brought that extra layer of specialness to it.
Yeah.
So basically create weekly videos and then go and win the biggest race of the year.
Basically, you have to do everything at once.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of...
It's a bit of luck.
It's a lot of chopping wood. You're like building up this huge, huge, huge wood pile and hoping that the match comes along at just the right time and you can make good on it, you know?
I would say like in playing devil's advocate a little bit and what I personally did growing up, because I never wanted to be a pro triathlete or aspired to this. I went to school and was like chipping away at my degree, thinking I wanted to do something in the medical field or whatever it was. And that is so important for athletes, especially when you're like in high school or college years, is to stay in school. Like don't leave school to pursue triathlon. You can do it alongside. And I did for probably 10 years. It took me a long time to get my undergrad degree, but I did it part-time while training at a high level. And I think I never ultimately ended up using my specific degree that I got, but mentally it's really nice to have a backup because as we said, the top 0.5% of pro triathletes can make a living at this. So just be smart in your decision-making and not to say have a plan B, but definitely keep your options open. Yeah? No? School's not important? I don't know.
No. I don't know how much I think an undergraduate degree is important. But what I think the point is here is that there are so, even if you are able to make a living from triathlon while you're a pro, that small percentage becomes even smaller making a living off a triathlon after you're a pro.
Yeah, right?
And
Nick.
Life is long. Life is very long. So I do think that, I mean, the community that makes up TTL is so passionate and amazing that I think this TTL will last forever. But I think it's an outlier. I mean, there's nothing really like that in triathlon. I mean, athletes have their fans, but this is something a little bit different.
Yeah. And let's be clear, this was not a thing that was planned at the inception of turning professional. This is something that came along with thinking in mind of what comes next. So I feel like that's always just kind of been part of who I am, thinking about like, how does this thing that I'm doing play into the next thing and build on that and build on that. And so like, that's kind of come a little bit more naturally for me, perhaps, than some of the other athletes that I trained with, that they kind of finished triathlon and then they were out and onto a completely different thing. So it just kind of depends. Like for Paula, like having the plan be the degree afterwards versus for me, I kind of identified while working on the degree that I couldn't think of anything that I wanted a degree for, and kind of like having a different sort of thing, ultimate vision maybe in mind, like keeping that in mind is great.
Yeah, I will say that if you're in the Olympic pipeline and it's looking promising that you can make the Olympic team, that's when you can put school on the back burner, because that is such a tiny window in your life where that's a possibility, and it requires being completely all in with no other distractions. So that's one little exception, I would say.
You know what all of this reminds me of? There's a really great parallel in music that because I think in triathlon, it's a little bit easier to see this athlete is really talented. They're going to do really well because you just race faster. And it's such an individual sport that the best athlete often does win. In music, music is so much more subjective, which is great and it makes it beautiful. But a lot of people think being a successful musician or a performer is just who you know, being in the right place at the right time, right? I think that gets way oversimplified. You still have to be the best of the best of the best. I remember even 15 years ago when I was already doing music professionally, I thought, oh, I just need opportunities. Like, I wish I got more opportunities because I'm ready. And now I look back and I was not ready. I thought I was ready. I did not have the skill necessary for it. And now I notice that a lot more opportunities just happen to fall into my lap because I've gotten more skill. And I think triathlon is the same way. Being a really, really good athlete is still going to be the foundation of your career. There's very few exceptions to people who have made their living off of it.
To be high level and the best, I'm noticing this with the time trial. It's really hard to dedicate yourself to different things that require different, very specific skills. And yes, there's crossover, of course, but I think if you really want to excel in any of the things you're interested in, you need to just pick one. You can get away with doing a little bit of both, but to truly, truly be the best, it's like you gotta be all in on that one thing.
I do think it will become obvious to you which of those you should work on once you've experienced a little bit of American gravel racing in the cross country. And like, once you've got a good feel for all of them and for how each is trending, I kind of feel like you'll know inside what's the best call.
Yeah.
Okay. And now let's say Maria finds her sport, is good enough at it that she's doing really well. How often is just doing, unless you're winning every race, how often are good performances enough?
Never anymore. There has to be something about you that people latch onto, even if that thing is you just win fantastically and dominatingly. That can be a little bit of the thing. And I would still say that whatever you're posting and your type of stuff should lean into that a little bit. So that's kind of where I was like the final thing that I wanted to say is like, because you asked about sponsorship and stuff, is as you're doing the storytelling and you're kind of alongside saying, here's how things are going. And maybe you're identifying like, I'm really good at writing, so I'm going to lean into blogging versus I'm good at talking, but I don't like being on the camera. Try to do podcasting and see if that's a good way for you to share your story. But then have like some components to yourself that you really realize this is what makes me and my journey unique. Lean into those things. In addition to that, like leaning into that as you approach sponsors or start to think about what sponsors you might pursue, look at companies that you feel like mirror your personality or things that are important to you and how you can be a part of helping them tell that story through you telling your story.
Yeah. And do sponsors reach out to you? Do you have to be proactive about talking to sponsors? Like, do you nourish those relationships as early on as possible?
It totally depends on how well things are going. So like after Paula exploded onto the triathlon scene, GE was calling.
Yeah, right. The president was calling.
Yeah, but if that's not the case and you're still working towards having that big result or putting all the pieces together, you'll probably will have to approach certain companies.
Yeah, I kind of experienced both ends of this in a bell curve type of way, like an inverse bell curve throughout my career because I started really well, had, Nike specialized. I actually like turned down a Red Bull sponsorship because I didn't drink Red Bull and I was like 19. I was like, oh, I don't drink God. Red Bull. I'm so stupid.
You turned down Red Bull. First time ever anyone has ever turned down a Red Bull sponsorship.
Because I was just so naive to the whole thing, I'm like, I just want to go to the Olympics and win the Olympics. And I've never drank a Red Bull. Red Bull is bad. That's the kind of my mindset. Anyway, but then as soon as I started racing poorly and was injured for years and years, zero people approached me. So I did have some connections from like previous sponsors when I was successful, but then they were like, okay, well, we'll give you product now, but we can't pay you. Like, it's so fascinating how quick people are to jump on the bandwagon and then jump right off when things aren't going well. So I could only imagine that had I not had that brief glimpse of success, how much even harder it would be to have sponsors interested at first. So it's definitely a matter of, I guess, reaching out, but also not being super, have high expectations at first of how a company might support you. Even now, we're building sponsorships up, so it might not be much at first, but as we nurture and grow and continue to have success, these sponsorships grow with them. So might start with a free pair of shoes and then slowly grow into something like bonuses and then financial. So
yeah, something that really stuck out in my mind early on, I can't remember who said it. I want to attribute it to the Wortels, talking about if I can get one new really good sponsor a year, like in years like 1 to 5 of being a pro athlete, like that was amazing and like a great rate, to where you have a sponsor who's like with you for life, wants to work through things, support you as best as they can, and has some sort of financial component to it. Those don't just like happen boom, 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 all at the same time. Like, build those slowly, work on it, find the company that you feel like you identify with most, you believe in the product, and it just feels so right.
And once you have that sponsor, how much percentage of your time is dealt like nurturing that relationship? Or I can't think of other ways that that would show itself in your life, but...
Yeah, I mean, it totally depends. My first sponsor was Rolf Prima. Actually, I guess before that, Athlete's Lounge, the bike shop that I worked at, sponsored me. And that didn't really have anything to do with any one particular product. I got discounts at the bike store. And so it was a little bit different. But like Rolf Prima was the first company that kind of sponsored me as a pro athlete in a unique way besides the bike shop. So they got the bulk of all the posts or anything that I was drawing attention to, because I wasn't paid to ride the bike. I wasn't paid to wear the wetsuit, none of these other things. So I did the absolute best job I could, making sure that I was tagging Rolf Prima and talking about them and, you know, yada, yada. And that built that really strong relationship that grew next, you know. And
then the landscape is so different now, though, because even back then, Instagram didn't exist to like tag.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was about riding the bike and riding the wheels and winning on that.
Yeah.
And then sharing that. So
maybe being in a magazine.
It's so different now than it used to be in terms of like media importance and taking good, authentic pictures.
Yeah. And I guess a piggyback onto that question is that like Paula and I are very fortunate in the companies that we work with feel very natural for us to incorporate, or we literally don't have to try at all. Like, we just get to go take a picture while riding our beautiful bikes, and they are specialized and they do have zip wheels and SRAM components on them. But we don't have to like draw your attention to that. And that is the dream scenario.
Right.
We're just driving around our van taking pictures.
I mean, before anybody paid me anything with a van, I was driving around my van taking pictures of it. So that was a slam dunk. No, but you're right.
It's not like it's a toothbrush sponsor where it's like, well, when am I going to put a picture of a toothbrush into my Instagram? Yeah,
that's going to be awkward as hell to incorporate this toothbrush into a post.
That's what I find a struggle with nutrition company sponsorships is, love the products, use them for racing, absolutely essential in my performance, but a little bit more challenging to display organically in a post or in a video without sounding like you're just plugging a sponsor.
Yeah.
So it's really hard. We freaking love like Precision, and we'll talk about it, and we'll genuinely talk about how we use it, which I think is a cool part of the podcast, as you can hear.
It's great for podcasts. The nutrition stuff is great for podcasts, but not great for visual media.
Yeah. It's harder for pictures and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long form thing to communicate how it benefits you rather than a picture. So,
we're swaying way off topic.
I thought that was, the question was basically for any advice whatsoever. So I spent a little bit of time thinking about what were the core things that I feel like people ask the most, and like the sponsorship thing and what makes me valuable is kind of at the top of it.
So. Would you ever say to someone who's getting in and wants to be a pro, wants to be really good, set yourself a timeline, and if you haven't achieved a certain thing by a certain time, then move to the next thing?
Yeah, sure. I've known a few people who have done that. For me, it was, I had an amount of money that I saved up in a savings account to get through my first couple years of pro. And if I ran out of money, that was the end of that. And I had to go get a job. So either a timeline or like financial thing, yeah. You know, just like definitely check in with yourself and like, have I made progress towards being a better athlete? And have I made any sort of progress towards being a better storyteller and I guess brand, and have some realistic expectations, set goals, and check in.
I'm going to challenge that and say the opposite, at least from a musical perspective, which I think they both follow this of like, it's my passion, but it pays very poorly kind of thing. And it's really hard to be professional in it. I would say I would rather be bad at something I love doing than good at something I don't love doing. So like you said, maybe make a list of like, what do you want from life? Is it to have a nice house and have a family with kids that you can send to a good school? Then maybe you do need to set like a timeline. But if you're kind of more of a free form explorer through life and you're like, well, yeah, I'm barely making ends meet working at the bike shop, but I'm able to race triathlon pro. And I get to wake up every day hoping that I'll get further in the next year, in the next season, instead of like, well, if I don't make it by year three, I'm quitting this thing.
Totally. It depends if your goal is to be a lifelong professional triathlete or if you want to have said that you are a pro for a few years and then you would get back to whatever your degree is in. That's the difference there.
The hard part about triathlon, to try to make it as a pro, is not only are you not making money at first, you're bleeding money. Just to get to races is so expensive. Yeah. And you're not making anything back. Even like if you get third place, you're barely covering your expenses for the trip. So it becomes a really tricky game. It's not like you're just staying equal. You're having to spend all of this money, not only on the travel and the race, but also on potentially having a coach and the gear, and all of these things add up. So maybe that's one slight different from music. I don't know if it has as much cost up front.
We don't.
But regardless, I agree with you, Nick, that if you are truly passionate and love something, you can do it. But I would say you can still do that with triathlon without being a pro at it.
Yeah, I like Eric was saying, it depends on who are you? What are you really trying to do here? What is the goal? Mm-hmm.
And what are you willing to put up with for that goal?
That's like that quote from Men in Black that's been memeified lately. Oh yeah, it's worth it. If you're strong enough.
Yeah.
So then my final little thing question for you is, obviously there's the performance piece that's important. There's the sponsor piece that's important. And then there is this third thing, which is, who are you to the people? Like, how are you interfacing with the people? What's your media stuff like? And my question for you is, I haven't heard you really mention this, but I have found this to be a trait of successful pro triathletes who also have a persona attached to them, is that they're not just average people. They kind of have a thing that you could elevator pitch. It's not just, Lionel isn't just fast. He's really interesting because of his whole background, right? You guys aren't just successful athletes. There's a specific thing about you that is unlike other pro triathletes. Do you think that is necessary for this to work?
Yeah, I think so. And that's kind of what I was saying with identify like a pillar or a couple, three pillars of you that make you special. And that's the thing that you lean into with your storytelling. You don't need to like every day be like, hey, it's really cool that I'm this, this, and this, rather than just keeping that in mind as a thing that you might sculpt your stories with.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, that was really interesting deep dive in that. I don't have any more desire than I did before to become a pro, because it just sounds like such a grind, and you need so much passion and perseverance to make it happen. But it really is interesting to get into the weeds about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting how similar it is to music, actually. Like, trying to become a musician and trying to become a professional triathlete are so similar. Except triathlon, you're like breathing really, really hard, and it's super painful.
But Nick did go to music school. We didn't go to triathlon school.
Yeah.
Nick has some qualifications. There's no triathlon school.
But no, it's also kind of funny how both of them have this component of, wow, this is actually really interesting. There are people who are born naturally good athletes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are born naturally good musicians, and they are not always the people who then go and become professionals or the best of the professionals, right? There is like this work ethic and passion component that goes such a long way in triathlon and also such a long way in music. Training is really easy when you're feeling great and loving it, and it's really hard when you hate it.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying you hate it, but I know that you obviously are naturally gifted for it. and you put in a ton of work.
Yeah, like part of the reason I dedicated myself pretty hard to school and got good marks and wanted to get A's and everything was, even as a teenager, I always thought to myself after racing, like, man, if I didn't win that race, there's no way I would keep doing this. Like, this is not fun. But I'm good at it, so I gotta keep doing it.
Right.
Maybe we should take this out of the podcast. But I had that thought as like a 15-year-old kid. Like, why are people who come in 30th here? But it's because there's so many reasons. Yeah. It's just so short-sighted of me.
I'll tell you why I think you're saying that. And I think this is, it explains it for a lot of people. I think you have never really felt what it feels like to not have that kind of self-confidence in sport. And so I think a lot of triathletes are made up of people who were not natural athletes, who were not their star baseball player. And at some point they went, what would be a really hard thing and a big challenge for me? And a swim, mm-hmm. bike, and run all at once seems like a crazy thing. So for them, proving themselves wrong about who they've been told they are their whole life, that's the gift. You never had that. So when you're like, you just see yourself who has that confidence not yeah. doing well and not right. overcoming anything.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they have their own successes within each
yeah.
result, I mean, regardless of the finishing place.
Do you know how happy I was when I finished my first try? I was, of course, nowhere near the top, but I just thought, because I didn't see myself as an athlete growing up, really. I yeah. loved snowboarding and skateboarding, but not aerobic sports. And I felt like I just proved that version of me wrong. I'm yeah. not just yeah. some musician. Like I tried hard at this thing that has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point, Nick. I realize now there's a billion reasons to do it. But there's, yeah.
I get what you mean. I totally get what you're coming from. But they have their own version of winning. It's just different. And I have that too. Like I was eighth overall yesterday. But in my head, I won because I won my age group.
Right. And the celeb division.
Yeah. And this, and also the double celeb winner. Division.
In my head, I was a winner because I was a double winner.
And they also mistakenly said I was the winner. but yeah, like and I think this is a healthy part of life is like setting these goals that are achievable and then achieving them and looking back and think like, I did it. Okay, what's next, right? That just kind of builds momentum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, it's still an addictive process for me. Despite the fact that I don't love it as much as half of everyone else that doesn't. We just finished Augusta. Last week's pod, I was like, okay, I'm taking a break. No question. My body is destroyed. And now Eric and I are looking up flights to Los Cabos. It's so addicting. It's like, well, yeah. that wasn't that hard. Let's just go do it again.
The mind but really remembers
maybe
the good
you
stuff.
Do like it.
Maybe yeah. I do like
Paula,
it.
Paula. Here's the thing. I know that you think you don't like it, but I know that you like it because you spend a ton of your free time looking at triathlon stuff.
Yeah, it's so addicting.
I think the one thing you might not like is how much you want to be good at it.
Yes.
What?
Oh, that's interesting. Like the best athletes, like, do they really love it or are they just like, do they just hate losing? Are they just addicted
to it? They're crushed by needing to be good at it instead of being able to be just good enough at it.
Yeah, the good enough people are like people like me, happy. Or it's like, yep, I'm just going to be in the middle. It's fun.
Still in the middle. It's going great. I think so, I'll pay my coach a little more.
Yeah. All three of us are talking about going to Los Cabos to
That's
race.
Correct.
I mean,
That's
we're
correct.
Flirting with the
We're flirting about, with the idea, thinking like, about, thinking including about it. Eric.
Yeah.
So we are looking for free Airbnb. Just kidding.
I don't know. I just, you know, yeah. I mean, my TT bike, I haven't been on it in a while, but it sounds a little bit okay.
Wow. Eric, if it gets bad, just find me on the course and we can ride and run together.
That's what I figure. Yeah. Like worst case scenario, I just sit down mid heat stroke. And about the time I'm recovered, you'll come by and we'll just walk it in together, drinking margaritas.
Cause I'll have had a heat awesome. Stroke also at the time. Yeah. So I'll be walking as well.
That would actually be so funny if we literally did the race together.
Oh my God. Wait, like at the same
time. Can we like get some ropes? Or what?
You guys have to do one-armed breaststroke while I do together? Freestyle.
Yeah, no, Eric would have to wait for me and then collectively Eric and I would wait for Nick. And mm-hmm.
I think you guys would just try to swim pace me and then bike pace me and then I'd see what I can do on the run. That's
no,
because
Nick,
we
we're
do.
Staggered. So you're already...
Right. Oh,
behind
shoot.
Us.
Yeah, that's right.
Right from the go.
We're going to need to get into the celebrity division of the 73 Los Cabos.
Oh, that's so good.
The that's celebrities so good. Go off with the pros.
Yep.
I love it. Oh my God.
This is going to be so a great funny. Time.
That's so funny. Well, yeah, we are very much flirting with it.
Here's another interesting anecdote from my week, and then I'll just stop talking.
Okay, great.
But last week after Augusta, I was in off-season mode, totally switched. I went down to meet Eric. I only brought running shoes, so I didn't have a bike. We didn't try to swim. But I did a little jog each day just to feel normal, because exercise makes me feel normal. And after a week of no biking or swimming, I feel totally awesome. So recovered. Nothing really? Hurts. I think all the little aches and pains and ailments that I get are from the bike, not from the run. It's crazy. Or from just like the cumulative load of everything.
Yeah.
Think about the like position you're in on a time trial bike trying to go as hard as humanly possible. It is not a natural,
that's not natural.
Position.
No.
You're locked versus when you're running. That is something we've been doing since we were cavemen. And it's an upright, very natural position. Your body wants to run. So I just think that we think that biking is safer because it's non-impact. But I think that the majority of the injuries and aches and pains I get are from riding my time trial bike maximum effort.
That's 100% why my hips messed up. Yeah.
And also it's the reason why my tendon in my right, my biceps femoris tendon is messed up actually.
Yeah. The locked in nature can be worse. And you're like locked into a certain knee flexion. And
yeah.
It's
yeah. We hope to God that your bike fitter gets it right on the first go, but
yeah,
1 millimeter out of place could or
send things out of whack. And yeah. Think about how many you're definitely on a bike for many, many more hours than you are running each week, and how many repetitions of that circular motion you're doing every time you go for a ride.
Let's not discount too that, like, for most people, biking is like half of your training. Not one third. So taking it out is really reducing the overall volume, like you said. But that's an interesting
systematically
point,
systematically, you're recovering.
In the TT bike, I noticed it yesterday too. I'm just like, God, this is such a constricting position. It's so isolating certain muscles instead of that running or swimming feeling of really engaging everything.
Fluidity. Yeah. And your body wants to be efficient. Like, it'll work towards efficiency. So anyway, it's just an interesting realization, because in the past when I've taken like a break or something where I'm only doing one activity today, my brain goes to cycling because it's the most restful, quote unquote, or like it feels like something I could do in an easy week and it won't have that much impact on my body, but it certainly does have an impact on your muscles, etc. So anyway, take a week off biking, everyone.
Just take a week off. Everyone.
Please, for the love of God, take a week off.
Yeah.
Don't do and anything.
Maybe it could be sleep week.
But the fact that I took a week and I still ran 50K last week, but I didn't do the other two, allowed for this realization. Uh-huh. Versus if I had taken everything off, I would have never associated this with biking.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's pretty interesting, man.
So that was my study for the off season. You guys are next.
Great. My study will involve a lot of sleep and cookies. By the way, I'd like to say that the second place in the celebrity division was Parker, who is a huge fan of the TTL podcast. And I think he's a fitness model. And he brought me cookies from his favorite bakery. If you see me at a race and bring me cookies, I might marry
Nick,
you right on the spot.
This is not using the pod for good, Nick. You're just leveraging this platform.
Wait, what did you say would happen if they did?
I'll take their hand in marriage on the spot.
Oh, that is dangerous.
Man or woman?
Oh yeah, or anything else. Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my off season. Eric, any off season ideas before we sign off here?
For what I'm going to do in the off season?
Any studies? Any off season studies?
I've already done mine.
Oh,
biking is bad for you.
Yeah.
Well, sleep week was my idea.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, yours is sleep week. I like that. Mine is cookie week.
What's cookie week?
Oh, we'll get into that in the future, but I think we could have a cookie week.
Like a bake sale.
Cliffhanger.
That's right.
And we're out.
Bye.
Okay, talk to you next week.
Later, everybody.